the morning. Our reading this morning is from the book of Revelation, chapter 21. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and the sea was no more. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down from heaven, from God, preparing a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "See, the home of God is among mortals. God will dwell with them. They will be God's people. And God indeed will be with them and be their God. God will wipe every tear from their eyes. Death will be no more. Mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first thing have passed away." And one who was seated on the throne said, "See, I am making all things new." And also, "Write this, for these words are trustworthy and true." Then the same one said to me, "It is done. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. To the thirsty I will give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life." God's word is life.
Behold, I am making all things new. That's the last of the promises we find in Scripture. It's there at the end of the final book of the Bible, the one we call the book of Revelation. There's something there for us, isn't there? That right at the end of our sacred text, we have this promise that there is yet more to come. That God is not finished. We are not finished. And so the invitation to us, well, it's more than an invitation. Behold, that signals an announcement. We're being told, look, see, wake up to what God is doing even now, creating, healing, renewing. Behold, I am making all things new. If we had nothing else to hold on to, wouldn't this be enough? Behold, I am making all things new. The promise in and of itself would be enough, and yet we have so much more. We have story upon story bearing witness to the truth of the ongoingness of God's new making power for life at work, even now. Stories of reconciliation. Stories of new directions taken. New leadership emerging. Stories of new life rising out of the ashes of loss, of broken dreams, broken hearts, broken minds, broken bodies. Stories of overcoming deep divisions. Old hatreds. This past week, in my time away on study leave, I was with a community of about 30 ministers gathering with Peter Short, a former moderator of the United Church. On Wednesday, we were treated to a morning with Dr. David Kuhl, beautiful man, the founding physician of the palliative care program at St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver in the 80s, whose work in the meantime has been with people suffering with post-traumatic stress. And now he's shifted his energies in yet another direction, having recently founded the Men's Initiative. That morning we had together with him, he told us something of how that initiative came about. He was away at a conference. And one evening he was reading the book that he had brought with him, in which he came upon the stories of three women. These were women who spent all they had to be able to get to the World Conference on Women in Beijing in 1998. He didn't relate those stories to us in detail. They were too brutal. But what he did tell us was that he found himself weeping at what these women recounted of their suffering at the hands of individual men and as a result of the evils of patriarchy. That same night, he picked up the phone, called his wife, and said to her, "I'm leaving my job at UBC. I want to devote my life to working with men. I don't know what that will mean for us, but that's what I have to do for the sake of our daughters, our communities, our world." You can hear in his voice, feel it through his vulnerability, his care and tenderness, his commitment to wake up to his own white male privilege and to work with men for another way of being, a way of well-being in their families, in their communities, in the world. As it turned out, when he returned to Vancouver and talked with staff at the School of Medicine, they said, "Well, actually, we'd like you to stay on and pursue this very work through our faculty." And so right now, this work of transformation is underway. There it is. "Behold, I am making all things new." Yesterday, I came upon the name of Greta Thunberg for the first time. Perhaps you already know of her. That 16-year-old girl from Sweden, who's been aware of the devastation of climate change for half her life, and who can't understand how talking about this and addressing this and taking action about this isn't the top priority of governments and individuals all around the world. In August last year, she began to school strike for climate change action, committing to show up to protest every Friday outside the Swedish Legislative Assembly instead of going to school until Sweden meets its Paris Accord commitments. She asks, "What's the point of an education if the scientific facts we already know aren't affecting change?" At first, it was just her. And then this school strike movement took off, not just in Sweden, but suddenly springing up all over the world, every continent. Young people out there in droves calling for action, political, social, economic change. These are people who don't have a vote, but who recognize the planet is in peril and the quality of their adult life is hugely threatened. Last month, Greta addressed the European Union at one of their official gatherings. She doesn't hold anything back. She challenged these leaders. "You hold three emergency meetings about Brexit, but not one meeting about the climate emergency?" She refuses to conclude her speeches with words of hope. "We need action," she says. "It's action that will give me and my generation hope." Her speeches are going viral. Meanwhile, the momentum is growing in North America with the proposal of a Green New Deal. If you haven't heard about this, there are copies of an article describing more available for you to take away with you today. Those pink gerbia, and those pink ones on the sides there, they are our reminders to us. There's something to pick up if you want to take it away. Drawing on Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal that helped pull America out of the Great Depression, A Green New Deal aims at addressing the climate emergency and economic inequality. This initiative is bringing people from all walks of life, from various political stripes, into conversation together to develop a shared vision for what a Green New Deal could look like for Canada. Already, a couple of fundamental principles have begun to be put forward. Principles that will move us out beyond the polarizing conversation that we're currently stuck in. Imagine us pursuing a plan that bears these two particular things in mind. Listen to this. A Green New Deal must, one, meet the demands of science and Indigenous knowledge, and cut Canada's emissions in half in 11 years while protecting cultural and biological diversity. And two, a Green New Deal must leave no one behind and build a better present and future for all of us. In other words, it holds a vision of caring for the environment and fair and equitable employment. There it is again, isn't it? Behold, I am making all things new. Already, coalitions have begun to emerge, convening conversations across the country to raise awareness, to map out specific actions. In fact, this Thursday, there is a town hall meeting in Fernwood Community Center. It starts at 6:30 p.m. and a further opportunity in Brentwood Bay on Saturday, 7 p.m. You see, the home of God is indeed among mortals, even us, even now. This is the stuff of a new heaven and a new earth. Well, I wonder what of the ongoingness of God's new-making power for life you are in touch with. And what more we might bear witness to right here this morning. They might be small things, not necessarily grand things, but things with new-making impact, stories of reconciliation, stories of new directions, stories of new life rising out of the ashes of loss, of brokenness. We've got time for a couple of "Behold, I am making all things new" stories this morning. And I wonder if there might be a couple of those just ready to come forward for us right here.
I'm sorry, I don't know very much about this, but I can just tell you something basic about something I saw on Facebook yesterday. It's an initiative that is providing very, very cheap solar power in the poorest areas of the world to begin with. And they're making it so cheap that the people really can afford so many hours of the power it provides per day.
Some of you probably spotted my photo on the Facebook page of the church or wherever it is Gordon posts things. But he caught me in the back garden, and then he came up with a new idea. And he said, "Bev, instead of clearing that back stretch that's still a wilderness for planting more flowers, why don't we plant some vegetables?" So this Thursday and Friday from 9 to noon, I'll be here with some garden tools, and I'd love your help. Now, you need to be able to climb over a bit of a metal fence, like a barrier. So maybe some of us aren't up for it, but a lot of us would. And I think it's a way for us to kind of live into God's and be conduits for God's new way. We can plant vegetables instead of more flowers. We've got plenty of those. And feed folks in the neighborhood. Feed ourselves. So please think about joining me Thursday and Friday at 9 in the morning. I'll be here.
Some of you have heard me speak in the past about my friend Giri Nashon, who taught biblical Hebrew and Hebrew poetry and other things at Congregation Emmanuel. He passed away 3 years ago now. Giddy's parents were from Prague, or a little town outside of Prague. And in this town, in one night during the Second World War, every single Jewish person rounded up in the town square, marched to the trains, off to the camps. And Giddy, maybe 10 years ago, was part of an initiative of the next generation of those Jewish people. So himself and a number of others went back to that town, were greeted at the train station by the people of that town, and brought back into the town in a kind of grand undoing of what had happened like 60 years before. There's a beautiful video of it, actually, that you can watch on YouTube of the whole thing kind of transpiring. That's quite an amazing thing.
This is a small thing compared to some of what's been said, but last week I found myself driving through a place called Hardman, Oregon, which was described to me as a near ghost town. I struck up a conversation with the most wrinkly-faced character you can imagine. He was very much not a ghost. And in a very Republican part of the state, he pointed out one of the houses that didn't look like a ghost house and had solar panels on the roof. So a little bit of the Green New Deal right there in Eastern Oregon.
These might be the kind of stories that we would engage each other with at our time downstairs after worship. Powerful story. If the new-making Spirit of God is already at work in hidden and not-so-hidden ways, what are we up to with our own lives, with our resources, with all that we are and have been given? Our love, our voice, our time, our strength, our intellect, our creativity, our imagination. How are we lending our lives to what God is already up to? Joining this powerful impetus for the renewing of the whole creation. It's not about taking on the world, but it is about waking up to the world and noticing the signs all around us of God creating, always creating. It's about letting the irrepressible spirit of life sing in our hearts, rise in our being, move in our hands, that even we ourselves, through our voices, through our bodies, may be signs of the very hope that sustains us. Before we move into singing, let's just take a moment or two just to be quiet together to allow whatever else the Spirit is doing to move in us.